R.O.D. taking over rule of three, baby. R.O.D. in the house. Where are you, Brendan? Where are you, Blair? We're here. Where are you?
Everybody, welcome to the Rule of Three podcast, a weekly catch-up from the championship weekend and a who's who to pay attention to going forward. I'm your host, Jared Clifton, and I'm joined today by my co-host, JJ Winter, Big Daddy Don Detweiler, and our very own Debbie Dirtbag, Ryan Bickerstaff. JJ, thanks for being on, buddy.
Oh, my pleasure.
So don't call it a streak, but that's two in a row now for the J-E-T-S Jets. As a huge proponent against tanking, I've enjoyed seeing the fight and the heart and the pride from this team the last couple of weeks. How much hope does it provide for you as a Jets fan going into next season with loads of picks, likely a new coach, and guys that give enough of a shit to actually play hard at the end?
It gives me a lot of pleasure. My son and I were watching a little bit of the highlights and just having a good deep talk like we normally do about the Jets, and I would much rather see them eke out a win or two down the stretch and lose that first spot. I mean, how often do we see the first QB go first overall? The best QB go first overall. I mean, you look at the past, 10 years, maybe three times. So, yeah, I'll take my chances.
I think you're absolutely right. I think that number one overall pick to a quarterback, the only time it's really worked out is kind of those rare situations. Peyton Manning gets hurt. The Colts luck into Andrew Luck. No pun intended, I guess, there. But they had the team built for Andrew Luck to succeed right away. But other than that, I agree. You're looking at Baker Mayfield, Jamarcus Russell, a lot of different guys that just haven't got it done. I'd rather see you guys go give it their all. And, you know, you guys have plenty of picks to be able to bone up on some other positions.
And honestly, if we're looking back at that Andrew Luck draft right now, wouldn't you rather have taken Ryan Tannehill?
Russell
and
Wilson.
Still have a player playing?
Russell Wilson.
Oh, Russell Wilson.
He won a Super Bowl.
Well, Don, it has to feel good to finally have that division locked up after a rough three-week span. So, looking ahead, with this being kind of a chance for them to catch their breath, who is the best possible first playoff match for the Steelers?
Well, it certainly does feel good for them to be locked up and sorted out here. And it was all because they started throwing the ball down the field and got a little bit more protection. Once they did that, the 10 and 11-man fronts broke up. And then the underneath stuff was there again. I think the best possible situation is Cleveland gets in and has to go to Pittsburgh. That would be phenomenal. If it doesn't happen, and I kind of don't feel like it will, I think the best situation is probably Miami with a likely rookie starter. Pittsburgh has a tremendous record against rookie starting quarterbacks, so I would be excited for them to see a Miami team coming into town.
So I probably should have done a little bit better research starting off. I agree with you on the Cleveland Browns, but when's the last time that a team was able to knock another team off three times in the same season? It seems like a tough ask.
It was a long time ago, if I'm not mistaken. Pittsburgh won Super Bowl by beating Baltimore three times in the same year. And Best of my knowledge, that was the last time. I do not wish to see the Ravens in the playoffs if we can help it. For that exact reason, the familiarity is there. The Ravens seem to have righted the ship, and that would be a tough out for both teams, and likely the winner of that game is going to be so beat up going forward, is going to be just so difficult because those games, for whatever reason, have become just such slugfests that I feel like a Cleveland team just wouldn't put up the same level of damage.
Yeah, I agree. And Ryan, as our resident college guru, I have a couple questions here, I guess, but every year it seems like we're seeing more and more significant players into the transfer portal. In your opinion, does that give us more access to seeing the best of the best get more opportunity to play, or is it kind of bogging down the talent pool, make it more difficult to grade these guys and really check out these guys for the upcoming draft when they go from, say, the SEC or the Big Ten to a lesser conference?
Overall, I think it's a good thing for college football because it allows players who were in, like, take Justin Fields, for example. When he was at Georgia, he was sitting behind Jake Fromm, and so he transfers to Ohio State. He gets to play immediately. So we got to see how good of a prospect he was right away because he transferred. So it's good in a lot of ways. When it comes to players leaving the Big Ten, leaving the SEC, that's kind of rare. A lot of what you'll more often see is the people who will go from, like, De'Aaron King, who went from Houston to the ACC in Miami. So when it comes to those cases, though, I think it does make it a little bit more difficult to grade players like Malik Willis from Liberty. He looks like a really good quarterback. He couldn't get it done in the SEC, and now Liberty's what, the Sun Belt? It's one of the group of five guys. So, I mean, he'll get drafted, but is, like, what's his ceiling? It's kind of hard to gauge. So I think it really depends on the situation, player to player. Overall, I think that the amount of transferring we're seeing is a net positive for college football, though.
And one thing I love about that is that they alleviated the whole rule about you have to sit out a year. I think that's really player-friendly and good for a lot of these kids who were victims of coaching changes and stuff, that they committed to a program thinking that this is what they were signing up for and end up with something completely different. So now they're not locked into that negative situation.
I agree 100%. You know, obviously, as a Texas Longhorn fan, I'm a little pissed off because all our good players are leaving the Tom Herman sinking ship right now. But I do. I think it's fantastic. Coaches can leave when they want to. Assistant coaches can leave when they want to. I think the players should be able to as well. Well, thanks for joining us tonight, guys. And before we get into tonight's segment, listeners, do us a favor and hit subscribe and leave us a review. Follow us on Twitter at Rider Dynasty. And check out our website, RiderDynasty.com, for all of our articles. We've got some really good ones, including one from Ryan Bickerstaff this week. And we promise to remain active all off-season long. But for now, let's get going on with the Point After Report. So tonight we got the Point After Report Championship Edition. Guys, I know I was able to actually pull off a couple of wins this season. I hope you guys were as well. But it was a big week for a lot of the big names. And if you had Alvin Kamara, Devontae Adams, Stephon Diggs, Mike Evans, congrats on the trophy. And if you didn't, there's a pretty good chance you finished second in your league. As fantasy managers, we remember these things. And as Eric and Brendan have preached all season long, recency bias is alive and well. How much does a huge championship matchup affect the rankings for 2021? JJ?
I try to be consistently wary of hot streaks. I like proven production over the long haul. Out of those guys who you just mentioned, I like all of them except Evans. I mean, they're definitely, you're going to be buying them at the top of their value. But on a side note, like, just because they had a great week 16, don't draft Tom Brady or Andy Dalton next year, right? Like, like, leave them sit until the last few rounds, maybe.
Now, you keep telling me Andy Dalton's going to be the quarterback for my Cowboys next year. So
the Red Rifle. How perfect to be a Cowboy.
No, I see that, especially in home leagues, these huge matchups. And again, Alvin Kamara is going to be picked high. Devontae Adams is going to be picked high. But, you know, there are a couple of – Michael Gallup is one that kind of – stick with the Cowboys. You know, he had a huge game. Andy Dalton was locked in on him the entire time. I feel like that boosts him a round or two from maybe – 13th, 12th to 11th or 10th, and I don't think that's necessarily a good thing. So just kind of curious what you guys' take was on that. Well, sticking with championship-winning performances, Ryan Bickerstaff's awesomely nostalgic article, Fantasy Flashback, details the top 20 best championship points getters from the past 10 seasons. Be sure and check it out on RiderDynasty.com. Outside the notable names we know to plug in, who do you recall from years past that delivered you a championship when just a few weeks before you wouldn't dream of them delivering you a pizza? Ryan?
Wow, probably 2018 with Adam Thielen in week 16. For some reason, he was in my lineup. He didn't need to be there. It was a redraft league, and it was a huge hit. Or not, I'm sorry, 2016. It was 2016. I just did the research. I remember that.
So my guy was actually a Lion, Ryan. So Zach Zinner is the guy that I plugged in. I think it was 17, maybe.
Zach Zinner.
Came in, he had 20-something. He probably is delivering pizzas now. So, it was a rough championship week. You know, it was Delanie Walker or Zach Zinner. Luckily, I picked the right guy. And I will never forget Zach Zinner, even though that's basically all he ever did.
Well, I will say, if Zach Zinner is delivering your pizza, It's going to be brought to you 3 yards at a time. So you're going to have to reheat that shit. That's all I'm saying. But I did find it funny that the Lions both had a Zach Zenner and an Amir Abdullah in their running back room. Oh. An AA and a ZZ.
A to Z. Yeah. JJ Dunn, can you guys remember any guys that shouldn't have been in your lineups that delivered for you guys?
Oh, no. I actually can't remember one. I tried to think about it before this, the pod, and all I can think about are the guys who let me down in week 16. LT back in 2006, you know, goes in on such a hot streak, puts up 80 yards, no TDs. Greg Jennings and Brett Favre, before I thought there was such thing as a stack, I had them stacked and came into the final game and sucked.
JJ, like you often do, you've segued us perfectly to our next point here. So for every championship goat, there's a toad, terrible on any day, that cost us the climax and otherwise fantastic season. What player sunk the most boats this week with a lackluster performance? And like a great matchup may boost a player for next year, does a total suck job in the finale have the opposite effect? Don?
Well, let's go around the lily pad here. I got a couple of toads for you. How about Matt Stafford? Putting up less than 1 point this week, 0.68 when he was expecting 20. For super flex guys, that had to be an absolute killer. Goff did the same thing, was expected 20 plus and turned in with just under 7. Just an absolute nightmare for your super flex quarterback, or for some people, even your starting quarterback, if you waited extra long to load up on the other skill positions. And Mr. Fall, Derrick Henry, 9.8 points when they're expecting over 20. And when you look at that 20 projected and you're thinking, yeah, 20 more like 30 because it's week 16 and nobody's going to want to tackle that load. And unfortunately, that's what we wound up with. So those are my toads for the week that probably wound up costing some guys big time.
Well, there's going to be a lot of interesting debates starting. Well, let's start them now. We're obviously seeing a changing of the guard at the quarterback position, but as dynasty players, our favorite pastime is anointing the new running backs and wide receiving stars. So let's get out our myrrh and cold press extra virgin olive oil and anoint. Who is the non-rookie that will be the hot ticket running back that everyone will get too cute on early next year? JJ?
Well, call me crazy, but it makes no freaking sense.
Oh.
Wow.
Oh.
Oof.
That one hurt. That one hurt a little bit.
Thank you. Thank you very much. It makes no freaking sense not to draft Zeke. I think I might be going in the wrong direction here. I think everybody's going to be too cute next draft season, and they're going to avoid Zeke and talk about how he had such a disappointing year. And, oh, we can't draft him. He is washed up. He is not even a running back one. Don't be fooled. He is going to be right back into a top five running back position next year. Don't be fooled. Don't sleep on Zeke.
So I agree 100%. I think the player that people are probably going to get too cute on would be Tony Pollard in this case. We've seen a few blow-up games. And like you said, people are sleeping on Zeke at this point, and they're going to see Tony Pollard as the next Chase Edmonds. And I just don't think we're quite there yet. So he's the one that I could see people nabbing maybe even fifth, sixth round next year in startups and redrafts. And I just don't think he delivers because I agree. Zeke's back next year.
Yeah, and another guy, Kenny Golladay. People are so down on Golladay right now for no reason whatsoever except that he was hurt all year. Get Kenny Golladay.
You think Stafford's his quarterback next year?
No, but I don't think it matters because he can perform really with anybody throwing him the ball.
Yeah.
He has shown that over the past few years.
Don, who are we sleeping on for next year?
I think guys are a little low on Myles Gaskin. I hear a lot of people saying that he's not going to be able to compete and not going to be probably going to be replaced at the position for next year. I see Miami working more on their offensive line, and I don't necessarily see them investing a tremendous amount of capital at running back. And Gaskin is already turning in a mid-20s level performance in terms of running back position. Had a monster game this past week with 33 fan points and is in a good spot there in a good position and already has the trust of the coaching staff. Bear in mind that he's going to be top 25 and he's already missed a pile of time between injuries and COVID. So if he fills all that in, he's probably a top 20, if not even a mid-teens running back for the season. So I feel like he's a guy that's being undervalued right now.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think they've shown that they've got someone that's serviceable in the running back. They've got some top three, top five pick. So they've got two first rounders next year. They can fill a lot of holes and get really good really fast by not having to grab an Etienne or someone in the second, third round. Well, one thing that fantasy analysts and fantasy Twitter typically does is they get stuff wrong. But the one thing they've gotten really right over the last couple years are picking Chris Godwin in 2019 and Calvin Ridley in 2020 as being the next big thing at the wide receiver. So for 2021, Ryan, who is it?
I'm going to go with Deontay Johnson on this one. I think Juju Smith-Schuster is on his way out in Pittsburgh. And, I mean, Deontay Johnson this season has 85 receptions for 828 yards and 7 touchdowns. And to contrast with Godwin's second season in Tampa, he had 59 receptions for 842 yards and 7 scores. So somewhat similar stat lines for Godwin and Deontay Johnson in their second seasons, but Deontay Johnson has been actually better. So a lot hinges on whether Ben Roethlisberger comes back next year, but as long as Deontay Johnson has a solid quarterback getting him the ball, I think he can have like a Godwin-esque third season.
No, I like that. You know, that's one of those. He's one of those guys I was probably a year early on. I had hoped that he would take a pretty major step, and I think he has to a certain point. But there's still enough juju, and now the emergence of Mapletron, it's made it a little more difficult. You know, with his drops as well. But I hope you're right because I have a lot of them in dynasty leagues. And now on to our main event for the evening. We decide whose tight end is better, JJ's or Ryan's. Don, you're the deciding vote here.
Oh, goody.
No, we don't do that?
Okay. No, let's just absolve.
So, I have a question. This is my first year doing rankings with you guys. There's been a tight end joke like that on every single rankings pod, right?
I think it's mandatory.
Okay, I just want to make sure I followed through with the tradition. But let's rank our dynasty tight ends for 2021. So, for our tier one, these two guys were either ranked number one or number two by all of our rankers this year, but George Kittle came in at number one this year over Travis Kelce. JJ, is that right?
That is right. They actually practically tied. There was only 0.09 difference, which is the closest of any two tight ends in our ranking. So they are their own tier. They are one and two. Whichever way you want to label them, if you want to take the younger guy or the guy on the better offense, it's up to you.
So everyone on this pod tonight had him at number two with the rest of our crew at number one besides Duncan. Are they guys that it's just preference? You would trade straight up for each other, Don?
Yeah, it's entirely based on preference. The thing that Kittle's got going for him is that he's a couple years younger, and that's what it is. I mean, Kelce's definitely all-pro, headed to the Hall of Fame, all that. On a dynamic offense, but it's not like Kittle is lacking for targets or touches in the whatever it is an offense you call San Francisco's. So in a healthy year for both of them, they're functionally equal players.
I think this tier of tight ends is probably the easiest tier of any position we have outside of probably the Patrick Mahomes by himself in tier one and the quarterbacks. This tier two is and it seems ever-changing. You know, we take a look at last year's rankings. A lot of these guys are in there, but we have them in different orders. Now, we have TJ Hockenson at number three, Mark Andrews at number four, Darren Waller at number five, Dallas Goedert at number six, and then Noah Fant sticks in the bottom of tier two at number seven. What do we think that caused TJ Hockenson to leapfrog guys like Mark Andrews and Darren Waller? Ryan?
For me, it's the combination of quarterback situation. Mark Andrews is too hot and cold, and I'm assuming here that Stafford stays in Detroit, but Hockenson, I believe, has a higher ceiling with like a Matt Stafford throwing him the ball than Mark Andrews has with an inconsistent, let's be frank here, Lamar Jackson. And I think that consistency has been shown more throughout this season, too.
So at the beginning of the season, especially last season, you know, we had Mark Andrews kind of as the 1C in that tier one, and I think a lot of that was on speculation. So, JJ, what's it going to take for Mark Andrews or maybe the Baltimore Ravens offense? What do they have to do this season to get him back in that elite tier of tight ends?
Well, they're going to need an offensive coordinator who can do a second year scheme. Greg Roman has sort of sat back on his haunches and ran out the exact same offense, and it's not working. Defenses have figured out that if you stop Mark Andrews, you stop the passing game, right? Yes. That's the guy that you have to worry about. Everybody else, they don't care if they beat him. So I feel bad for Mark Andrews. It's not because Lamar is not accurate. It's because they're covering him really well because there's nobody else there they really have to worry about. So I would really like to see Greg Roman sort of open up that passing attack and let Lamar Jackson show his arm.
One more guy that was kind of on the fringe of the elite level was Darren Waller. And really, he's done just about everything that he could be asked in a follow-up season from his breakout season in 2019. What is it that makes him, you know, kind of fall? We kind of overlook him and really kind of have him that middle of tier two when, by the numbers this year, he's the number two tight end. I know that's with George Kittle missing most of the year, but quite a bit behind Kelsey, but favorably above the remainder of the players. Don?
Well, I think the reason Waller kind of got left behind was simply just the instability or lack of consistency, I guess, with the Raiders' offense in general. I mean, we kind of expected a step forward from the wide receivers, and we didn't really get it. We kind of expected a more consistent running game, and we didn't really get it. We kind of expected a reasonable game-to-game plan from the coaching staff, and we didn't get it. The only consistent has been that Waller is just covered up in targets because Derek Carr trusts him, and he should trust him. He's the most consistent and most productive weapon on that offense right now, and I unfortunately don't see that changing unless we get some marked growth from the young wide receivers that they've brought in or some kind of consistent change in the offseason with either a new offensive coordinator, although I don't really see that one happening, or just a real change in philosophy. And with Chucky, I doubt it.
So the two names that finish up our tier two, Dallas Goedert and Noah Fant, you know, they, I think, both have a lot of potential going forward. Both have some question marks in their offense. I think a lot of it has to do with what their quarterbacks can do. Does Jalen Hurts stick with the Eagles as the starter next year? I tend to think so. Where do we go post Drew Lock? Do we go post Drew Lock? Do those guys really belong in this tier, Ryan?
I think they belong a tier below. I think Hockenson, Andrews, Waller is a solid tier. Goddard and Fant should be their own. Goddard, his value hinges greatly on whether Zach Ertz is on that roster, healthy. Just it's a different dynamic when Ertz is in the game for Goddard. So if Ertz leaves Philly, I think Goddard becomes part of this tier two without question. And then Noah Fant, if he can get a real quarterback, he also belongs here. But for now, I would make that tier three and a completely separate thing.
JJ, you've got Dallas Goedert at five and Noah Fant at six in your rankings. What's more conceivable? TJ Hawkins goes up a tier into the George Kittle, Travis Kelsey tier, or Noah Fant drops down to the tier three with guys like Mike Gesicki and Hunter Henry?
Wow. So which is more likely? Goddard going up?
I'm sorry, Hawkinson going up as our number three, or is Noah Fant as the bottom of our tier two going down?
Well, as a pessimist, it's always easier to fail than it is to succeed. Noah Fant doesn't have to do a whole heck of a lot to drop lower. He has Drew Lock as a quarterback, which sort of caps you. John Elway has shown that he's unable to draft a quarterback. So who are they going to get? Who's going to coach that team? You know, unfortunately, Noah Fant might be a victim of circumstance.
Yeah. That's a shame. You know, he's such a talent. And I think, you know, looking through this entire list of tight ends, that was one thing that I saw. There are a lot of really good tight ends in some really, really poor situations. So you move some of these guys around, you know, almost like the conversation we were having on Slack today about changing some characteristics of the quarterback. You change a little bit of the situation, and these guys with tremendous amounts of talent, they contend with the George Kittles and the Travis Kelseys and just the fantastic situations those guys have.
Well, it's not even just that. It's you look at Goddard, and there's a real difference here between when he plays with Carson Wentz or when he plays with Jalen Hurts. Hurts doesn't seem to want to utilize the tight ends as much in his progressions and play running, as Wentz was basically using the tight ends exclusively. So it's one of those, even within the team, there's just so much variation. And tight ends so much are either underutilized or classic tight ends really don't get the play that they used to in college. So some of these guys come up from the college ranks and jump into starting and just don't know how to maximize a pro style tight end.
Yeah. I think the one thing though with Goddard is that as long as Peterson is the coach in Philadelphia, you're going to see a tight end heavy offense. So even if it is Hurts, I think Hurts will get coached up to use Goddard a lot more than he has. He has peppered him with targets, but not too accurately. So we'll see what happens in the offseason.
Yeah. Well, moving on to our tier three, this tier three and tier four are extremely interesting to me because it's kind of an amalgamation of all of the tight ends put together, and we try to figure out where they go. And we've got probably our biggest differences in rankings with these two tiers. So our tier three, at number eight, we have Mike Gesicki. Number nine, Jonnu Smith. Number 10, Hunter Henry. And number 11, Evan Engram. Don, who doesn't fit here?
Oof. That's kind of like the spare parts bag here. I guess the guy that doesn't fit is, I think I would take Gesicki and I would put him at the bottom of that tier two, right along with Fant, because they're basically the same guy. I just don't see him getting utilized as consistently as he should be in that Miami offense, which is kind of odd considering that he just blows up one week and then he's gone the next week. That level of inconsistency is concerning, but I think that's more about quarterback play. I can't trust Evan Engram to stay healthy, so it's one of those, this whole thing is just like, if I have to pick somebody I want, I guess it's Gesicki, but boy.
In my notes, I've got the same thing. You know, Mike Gesicki is the one person, and I think he's ranked correctly here, but he's the one that doesn't fit. You know, Jonnu Smith does not get the volume necessary in that Titans offense. Henry and Engram, so much talent, so many injuries. I think Hunter Henry with Herbert here, you know, assuming he sticks with LA next year, that's probably a better situation than what Evan Engram has in New York. But those three guys, they scare the shit out of me. And you're talking about, we're still talking about tight end ones here, and that really kind of shows me, you know, how big a discrepancy there is between what we're calling elite or even serviceable tight ends and the guys that might get you a zero each and every week. JJ, what are your thoughts on Jonnu Smith? We talked about the Titans offense just not being pass friendly. What can he be?
I think Jonnu Smith fell into the Ian Thomas, Irv Smith hope bucket of a tight end who is going to turn around and break out this year. And none of them have. Ian Thomas disappointed the most. Jonnu has been disappointing. Irv Smith is disappointed. You're not in a pass-happy offense. You need the targets. I mean, we ask what makes Darren Waller a great tight end. Probably 135 targets would make you a pretty great tight end. You know, that helps. Jonnu will never see the type of volume he needs to be a type tight end because he's not that talented, to make people forget.
So speaking of talented guys, I think as far as tight ends go, I'm not sure you can find a whole lot more talent than Evan Engram. And again, because of injuries, poor play, getting in on the end of Eli Manning's career, it just really hasn't translated for a full season. Don, is Evan Engram a guy that fades away like a
Kellen Winslow?
Kellen Winslow, yeah. I mean, is he effectively what he's going to be at this point?
I feel like he has to be what he's going to be because this is the first year in a long time that he's been healthy for this much of a season. So you're seeing what you're going to get out of a maximum level Evan Engram, albeit on a funky New York Giants offense. Maybe in a better situation with a more established quarterback, you can get more out of him, but that's just the time when his leg falls off. So who knows what's going to happen here. We'd love to say that he's going to take that dynamic athleticism, and he's definitely showing the dynamic athleticism, to a new place and be electric. But, boy, it's where he's being drafted in startups, I think I'd just wait another round and then take my chances elsewhere.
Jared, now, Evan Engram has another year left on his contract, but he can be cut, and they would save about $6 million from the salary cap. Do you think Evan Ingram's going to be a Giant next year?
He is the absolute perfect cap casualty. You know, he's the type of guy that we see, you know, scratch our head a little bit just because of the talent, but the production's not there. The cap savings are so much, and the Giants need a lot. They really do. I know they contended in that cluster of a division in the NFC East, but they need quite a bit to really compete with what should be a strengthened Cowboys and Eagles team next year, an ascending Washington football team. I think it's a luxury to have a tight end that's good, but it's going to give you 8 to 10 games.
What about if he goes to the Arizona Cardinals? That would be a great tight end weapon for them.
I think it would be fantastic. You know, my question becomes, name a single tight end that Cliff Kingsbury has ever elevated. Jason Morrow, maybe at the very beginning. I'm not even sure if Jason Morrow was Cliff Kingsbury, if he was Mike Leach. I don't know of any tight end that's ever really performed well in a Kingsbury offense.
You know, Jared, I try so hard to like you. And you bring up Jason Morrow. Like, it always comes back to the Jets. It always comes back to the Jets.
No, I would love to see Kyler get a really good tight end. Kyle Pitts is the guy that I'd love to see in Arizona. If they do fall out of the playoff hunt this weekend, they could be in that range to get him. You know, what a weapon he would be. Slot type of tight end for that offense. And Ingram could be that, but I don't know. So sticking with something that JJ typically does in these rankings, let's talk about Hunter Henry real quick. He's another guy that could be on a new team next year. But as far as getting him on another team for your fantasy, what would it take Hunter Henry plus to get, say, Darren Waller? Ryan?
Hunter Henry plus maybe a second. I don't know. I'm actually kind of looking at Hunter Henry as a buy. I want pieces of that Chargers offense now that we've seen how good Justin Herbert is. So if I have Henry, I'm probably trying to hold him. But if I'm trying to trade up and get a Waller type, I think the most I would pay would be a second additionally.
And that would be in a tight end premium league, right?
Yes.
Well, moving on to our tier four, again, this is another really interesting one. It's a large tier, and we come up with our first disparity debate. Looks like all the disparity debates are between me and somebody today, so Don, I'm going to let you judge this first one between Ryan and I. We have a pretty big gap between Robert Tonyan. He has him at the tight end 8, and I have him at tight end 21. So, Ryan, I'll give you the first go to tell me why I'm dead wrong.
The biggest thing here for me is that Aaron Rodgers likes him. That's huge. Aaron Rodgers trusts him. He trusts him, especially in scoring range, as evidenced by Tonyan's 10 touchdowns this season. He's 26 years old. He comes out of Indiana State, very small school. If he was a good prospect, I don't know. I never heard of the guy, honestly. But he's definitely somebody who could have flown under the radar. And so he comes out of nowhere. It's his third season, and he's putting up numbers, 50 receptions, 568 yards. Again, the 10 touchdowns I mentioned. Tied to a great quarterback like Rodgers, who likes him in the red zone. I'm willing to take a shot on Tonyan over guys who are in a little bit more precarious situations when it comes to their surrounding talent, like a Noah Fant, Tonyan ahead of guys like Jonnu Smith and Evan Ingram, who we just talked about, Hayden Hurst. Yeah, I don't think he's quite like top 7, but I would rather take a shot on that kind of upside.
That's a fair point. I will give him one thing. He's the most handsome known athlete to come out of Indiana State, but he's going against Larry Bird, so that's not really all that great of an accomplishment. But my point on Robert Tonyan is James Jones. 2013, that is the last time the Packers have had a player repeat as their number two wide receiver or receiving player. And if we want to take it back further, counting Tonyan this season, the Packers have had 7 different tight ends be their tight end 1 over the past 10 seasons. There's just not enough continuity. I know Rodgers loves him, but that's just such a revolving door to be his number two guy. And as big a fan as I am of Tonyan's breakout season, he's a true two-outcome guy. If he scores a touchdown, he's a tight end 1. If he doesn't, he's off the map. And there's no flukier statistic in fantasy football than the touchdown. He has the exact same amount of targets as Tyler Eifert this year. And for a guy that hovers just north of 60% total snap share with a route participation percentage in the bottom third of starting tight ends, we could see a huge drop-off in this offense if the tight ends go back to the mean.
Wow, before Don judges, I just want to say I also had Tanyan at 21, and oddly enough, that's exactly what I wrote down, what you just said. So, great job.
I should have had you judge.
Wow, that was really smart. That was great.
It's like you guys talk. It's uncanny. Ryan, you did a nice job there. You laid out some good points, and I like the potential here, but everything about Tanyan's screams flash in a pan to me. Rodgers is Mr. Finicky and will forget you tomorrow. Absolutely. 10 touchdowns in his first year of doing anything just screams regression to me. And for those reasons, I'm going with Jared. I absolutely worry about the consistency in this Green Bay offense simply because the guy's name is not Devonta Adams. And after that, there are no knowns except for Aaron Jones being consistent. And that's all you get in Green Bay.
And Quadzilla taking over the running game.
Quadzilla.
Did you see him this weekend? AJ yeah. Dillon, baby. Yeah. Woo. Choo choo. Sorry. I digress. You can mute that. Just delete it from the whole thing.
We're not deleting Quadzilla. Are you kidding?
We're talking about tight ends. I like quads. Let's just keep going.
Wow. Just wow. Jared, you win.
All right. 1-0. I started off 2-0 last week and got smoked in the last one, so. We've got another disparity bet at number 13. This time it's Hayden Hurst. And another disparity where I have someone way off what someone else does. So JJ has Hayden Hurst at number 28. I have him at 13. Ryan, I'm going to let you get some payback and judge this one.
All right.
After we give JJ a chance to tell me why I'm wrong.
Oh, I'll keep this very, very simple. Despite looking like Cameron Poe, Hurst does not belong with the big boys on the big airplane. He's old. Yet not good. So, right? He has all the age without the veteran experience. PFF has him ranked as the tight end 58. Did I mention he's old and not good? I don't know why you would invest in an old, not good tight end. But go on. You can tell me why.
So like we talked about, you know, this tier is so difficult, and it's been such a revolving door from about the 9 to 15 range for the past several years. But what I'm looking for in this range are two things. Athleticism, which he has, and positive regression, which he needs. And his peripherals took a huge hit in his first year in Atlanta for a multitude of reasons. But when your quality of target and catchable target rates are dead last in a new offense, it's hard to get over that hump. And his size and his athleticism are near elite, you know, according to player profiler metrics. And unlike Green Bay, Matt Ryan and Atlanta have shown a willingness to target the tight end often. You know, Hurst has 81 targets through 15 games. And Austin Hooper just left 97 on his way out the door to Cleveland. So with Julio on the downside or even out the door as well this offseason, Hurst probably, for me, has the most potential in the seeming dead zone of tight ends to catapult up the board in front of volumeless guys like Robert Tonyan, Jonnu Smith.
I'm going to give the W to Jared here. I also have Hayden Hurst ranked 13 for similar reasons. Again, kind of like my views of Tonyan, it's about the potential in the offense more than what's been actually proven over consistency over a period of years.
Yeah, the only thing that Hurst has potential for is like osteoporosis. Like seriously, he should drink more milk. Bone density is very important as you age.
What are the chances that 6'5", 260-pound Hayden Hurst is in front of you? That you tell him that.
Oh, 100%.
I should have thought of who I was asking.
I mean, he wouldn't even notice I was there.
Well, at number 14 and number 15, we got a couple interesting guys kind of on the opposite ends of the spectrum this year. Logan Thomas with the Washington football team and Austin Hooper, who until this week when all of their guys decided to piss off the COVID protocols, really wasn't terribly involved. That's Austin Hooper. Don, out of those two guys in a vacuum, who do you want on your team?
Oh, I want Logan Thomas. This is not particularly close. Logan Thomas demonstrated when he had a real quarterback in Alex Smith that he's absolutely capable of getting open, can be a difference maker in terms of getting first down yardage, and can handle high volume of targets. I liked him a lot. He did well in the red zone. It was everything you asked a tight end to be. And Austin Hooper was another guy who was kind of a flash in the pan in Atlanta, and then heads off to Cleveland for all the money and left all the offense in Atlanta. So for me, I'll take Logan Thomas, because sooner or later they're going to get themselves a quarterback for the Washington Football Club here and get that sorted out, probably in the draft this year. So I'll take Logan Thomas at the two, for sure.
And Ryan, going to back to Austin Hooper here, you know, you've got an interesting ranking here. You've got Harrison Bryant at 16, Austin Hooper at 17. Do you think next year is the year that Harrison Bryant takes over as the guy for tight end in Cleveland?
Yeah, I mean, this is total speculation. Just by the eye test, Harrison Bryant is a better player. And talent tends to rise to the top. So I don't know if it's going to be next season, but it's going to happen where Harrison Bryant is going to be the, unless they draft somebody, he's on a trajectory to become the top tight end in Cleveland at some point.
I think the problem that Harrison Bryant's going to have with an Austin Hooper, it's the same problem that Irv Smith had with the Kyle Rudolph. And it's funny that Logan Thomas is here too, because they're just consummate professional tight ends in the NFL. They block, they run block, they pass block, and they can catch balls. It is hard to displace that coming in as a rookie or even a second-year tight end. It's the only reason I'm a little bit wary of Harrison Bryant is only because Austin Hooper does everything well, right? Logan Thomas does everything well. Kyle Rudolph did everything okay, right? But still, he was at a level, a consistency level. And I think that's what a lot of these old school coaches look for at the tight end position.
Yeah, I agree.
But by the way, Logan Thomas is 29. I didn't realize that. That's really old.
That's older than Hayden Hurst. That's yeah, what I'm saying.
Yeah, he might have osteoporosis. I'm going to send him a tweet. Just asking.
Brennan's been saying all year, don't at players. So
no, not. I'm not going to call him out for anything. I'm going to send him like a concern, like maybe send him some milk,
some tips maybe to how to handle osteoporosis.
No, just a carton.
Okay.
That was a great joke.
Put a sign on the back of the carton that says, "Where's my quarterback?"
Sorry, go on.
Well, number 16, we have yet another disparity debate. All of our disparity debates were in this tier. Again, another one between JJ and I. So he had Hayden Hurst at 28, and I had Hayden Hurst at 13. He has Tyler Higbee at 29, and I have him at 14. So we're the same amount apart. Don, you get to judge another one here.
All right.
JJ, break the perfect game.
All right. I'm just looking to see. Of course you picked Don to judge, because he's closer to you. I think Ryan should judge, being in between us two.
Okay, Ryan, you're the judge. And then if you guys don't agree, we'll do the disparity debate on the judge.
Oh, I like that.
Interesting.
And JJ, you're the judge. Does that work?
That's perfect. That makes complete sense to me. All right, I'll go first. Tyler Higbee, 21st in points per games, and that was buoyed by a week two of 28 points. Didn't really sniff that sort of excellence any other time. I'm not sure why we're talking about him. He had a little bit of a hot streak at the end of the year last year, and everybody jumped on the bandwagon. He's not a very good tight end, right? So he's 27. I'm sending him a tweet about it. Have to watch out for these guys, but he showed us he's 21st in points, right? So how we can have him above that, I don't know.
So I think that you kind of nailed one of my points, in that he had a huge second half or last five or six games of last season. And all that was his opportunity. And that was Gerald Everett not being able to be on the field. And we saw what he was capable of last season when Gerald Everett went down. And with the expectation that Everett's going to leave the Rams this year, because they're probably not going to pay him to stick around, unless Bryson Hopkins slots into his role, Higbee probably has the best potential in this tier to reach that 100 target threshold. And like we said, what makes Darren Waller? 100 plus targets. So if he gets 100 plus targets, regardless of how much milk he needs to drink, he's still a capable tight end. And he has the number two production premium and target premium, which again isolates situation and personnel around him, and he's number 5 in fantasy points per target. So even though I agree with you, he's not a fantastic tight end, he's in a fantastic opportunity, and given more opportunity, I'd really like to see what that translates into.
God damn it, he won that.
Yeah.
Ryan.
Yeah, no, like, I was leaning with JJ here because I was never on the Higbee train, never, but yeah, you put a lot of good points forth, and I wouldn't rank him much higher than I have him right now at 22, but he definitely, you're right, there's a lot of upside there.
Don Larson, perfect game, World Series.
I object. Don, I want to go back to the original judge. Don, what do you think?
Now you want me back. Huh? Okay. Jared still wins.
We're calling that 4-0. We're calling that 4-0 tonight.
Wow. All right.
Now getting into another tier that's really kind of difficult to discern. And I also noticed there's some familiar names that we talked about at the beginning of the year. Chris Herndon, Zach Ertz, Blake Jarwin. All of those names, I think all of us believed in to different extents. And then Irv Smith, I think he's elevated himself into this tier. But what is this tier, JJ?
The once or future tight end.
Oh, nice.
Tier.
Okay.
That's what I'm looking at. You have Irv Smith. He's better than last season. He got better. He seemed to kind of turn it on a little bit at the end. He had a good week, kind of scared Ryan a little bit in his championship game. Coming at his Kamara, sort of blunting the 56.
Just a little worried. But
good job pulling out the championship, buddy. Same to you. Actually, thanks. Congrats to all of you. You have all won championships this year. Congratulations.
Thank you, kind sir.
I did not. I came in third place 6 times.
Oh, man. Oh. That's pain.
Thank you.
Consistency.
Thank you. Yes, consistently not good, but I'll take it. I'll take it. I had a rough year, but sorry. Going back to this after thanking everybody. Yeah, I don't know. Chris Herndon is somebody I am high on, but it's time for him to show up, right? He actually had a decent week this past week, but Gase is getting fired, so he has to show what he can do. Ertz, is he bad or was that situation just so horrific?
We are way too low on Zach Ertz.
He's coming off of substantial injury.
Yeah, but having him at 19, he was the number 3 tight end ranked last year.
Yeah, like he needs to. He's still a top 12 tight end for me.
Yeah, I'm much too low on him, but you know I have that age thing. The only guy who I don't feel fits here is Blake Jarwin.
Yeah, agree. I think he was one of those guys that again the fantasy world kind of anointed. It made sense that he would kind of fill a role in that. Supposedly dynamic Dak Prescott-led offense, had the injury, didn't really get to see it. Dalton Schultz did kind of what he was supposed to do, but where does Blake Jarwin fit in? If you have Amari Cooper, if you have CeeDee Lamb, if you have Michael Gallup, if you have Zeke, if you have Tony Pollard, there's no targets left.
No, I think you're going to see what we saw out of Dalton Schultz this year.
Yeah.
I mean, I always thought they were the same player. Turns out they are 2 different people. but I think they're the same type of Jeff Swain, right? That whole group of tight ends they had for a while there. They're all the same.
I was going to say, like, are we so sure that they're going to move on from Dalton Schultz? Is there any benefit to moving to Blake Jarwin over Schultz?
No, it makes more sense for them to grab a guy like we talked about getting, being a cap casualty in Evan Ingram. It makes more sense for them to grab someone like that.
A Zach Ertz,
which I would love.
That'd be an interesting twist in the East.
It would.
That would be a total AFC East thing to do.
Mm-hmm. So moving on to Tier 6, this is our biggest tier, really kind of finishing off the tight ends. Relevant guys, again, kind of a mixed bag of people. We've got Dawson Knox at 21, Rob Gronkowski at 22, Harrison Bryant at 23, Albert Okwuegbunam at 24, Jared Cook at 25, Cole Kmet 26, Adam Trautman 27, O.J. Howard 28. Don, 3 guys from that tier. Who do you want?
I'll take Knox, Bryant, and give me Trautman. The others pose either age, damaged goods, or just kind of some shenanigans that I don't trust. So I like Knox. I think Knox has the athletic potential to grow in that Buffalo offense. And now that it seems that Allen has decided to be a dynamic quarterback instead of a guy who chucks the ball in the general vicinity of people, I think Knox's role can certainly grow there as Allen grows into the offense. I think Brian is going to be more of that dynamic tight end in Cleveland, where he will get the kind of the spread out, the moved around the field, and have more opportunities in a more complex passing game than Hooper will. I think Hooper's going to stay more in line. And then Troutman, I think, coming into year two, may finally start to flash, and we'll see what happens with him. Cook can't play forever, so eventually he's going to be the guy in New Orleans, so we'll see what happens there. I think he had a lot of potential coming out as a third-round draft choice, and I think he's the guy I have the most faith in of the remaining assembled.
So, Ryan, let's say that the Tampa Bay Buccaneers make a run this year, win the Super Bowl. Rob Gronkowski, does he stick around for another year? Does he go back to pot farming?
Oof. He probably walks away. I think he will. Like, I think he came back to prove that he can win a Super Bowl with Tom Brady without Bill Belichick. So, or I don't know what was going on in the guy's head, but I speculate that that might be part of it. So if it does end up shaking out that way, I think there's a good chance he might walk.
I think for sure if Brady were to call it quits, he would. But I tend to agree. If you're Rob Gronkowski, you've made so much money from all the peripheral aspects of NFL. Why would you continue on? Again, he's 31, so JJ obviously hates him. Going to JJ, you've got Cole Kmet at number 11.
I do.
I don't hate it. But why?
Well, first of all, he's a first-round pick. First-round tight ends generally always pan out.
He's a second-round pick.
Was he a second-round pick?
You got dirtbagged.
First tight end this year, though.
Dirtbagged. Yeah, the first. That's what I meant.
Yeah.
That's not what I meant. Thank you, Ryan. I think he has really started to show up. He has shown a lot of poise down the stretch. He's understanding the game. I think he's athletic. I think he has everything that offense needs, and they're going to get a new coach in there. And I'm really excited to see what he can bring to the field in the upcoming years. And he is young and fresh. He has the legs to really make that offense go. I think the ceiling is remarkably high for him.
I agree.
I just don't know why we have people above him like Gronkowski. If we're looking at a three-year window, I know Cole Kmet, I mean, outside of an injury, is playing for 3 years. Yeah. Jared Cook isn't playing for 3 years. Rob Gronkowski's not going to play for 3 years. I mean, Albert O is not even going to be the starting tight end on his team. Yeah. So I just think this is criminally low for Cole Kmet and Dawson Knox as clear-cut number one tight ends.
I agree. You know, I think going back to a bit of recency bias, it's so difficult to see rookies, second-year guys, because they really don't pop until the third year. It's tough for us to see and project those guys because tight end is extremely difficult to project. You know, we've gone through 28 tight ends here, and unless there's somebody else that you guys want to talk about, that's kind of the depth. That's kind of the end of the road for me. And we haven't seen what these guys, Troutman's another guy that we're purely speculative on. I think that's where it gets really difficult outside of probably tier four for the tight end. So I agree. I think we're way, way low on Cole Kmet and Dawson Knox. Go get them.
Yeah, you know, somebody to keep an eye on is Caden Smith on the Giants. If Evan Engram walks, he's the guy to slide into that role. Yeah, so I would definitely keep an eye on Caden Smith. I think he can give you 70% of what Evan Engram did, but be healthy the whole year. So that's actually probably all of what Evan Engram does.
Yeah. Will Disley's another guy in Seattle that's going to be in year two after a Achilles surgery. So next year he should be back to kind of his athletic potential. And even at the end of this season, it's starting to produce a bit. But, you know, it's Seattle, so who knows with tight ends. There's another starter to put on the depth. If you can get him cheap now and then kind of just stash him and hope.
Yeah, and David Njoku might be an interesting stash too. I think he needs a fresh start. So if he goes somewhere this offseason, he has a lot of upside that could still be unlocked. He's still very young. I think he's only 24 still.
Yeah, I mean, he's 24. I think, you know, the same thing goes for O.J. Howard. I mean, if O.J. Howard gets a run, but I think they fall into that same category as Irv Smith, the uber athletic guys who are kind of one trick ponies.
Mm-hmm.
And coaches can't count on them in down the stretch. You know, when you see the Eagles and the Eagles have to protect their quarterback, they keep the tight ends in. They have them chip. They, you know, and you look at these guys like Dawson Knox and Zach Ertz, guys who are willing to get their nose in the Rob Gronkowski is the best example. A run-blocking tight end who will lay people out wherever necessary and catches the ball. And those are the guys who quarterbacks love and who end up getting the reps.
Well, besides the 5 minutes that I've allotted for JJ to wax poetic and speak glowingly about Eric Ebron, that concludes our rankings for the year. And we'll be back, I'm sure, early next year to kind of hone and fix and repair some of the rankings that we've got. So, JJ, well, I'll let you start your 5 minutes now.
All right, Jared. Well, Eric Ebron is hands down the best tight end ever to grace the hallways of an NFL team. No, I'm just kidding. Jared, now that we're finished with tight ends and in the spirit of the new year, I thought now would be a great time for us to roll out some resolutions, our own personal resolutions. And I don't want to hear, Dom, that you're going to read a little bit more, because I know you're not.
That's true.
Right? Right? This isn't those kind of resolutions, right? I am not going to exercise every day. These are our fantasy football resolutions. All right? So let's start off with Don. No, actually, you know what? I'm going to start off. I'm going to give you my resolution for this upcoming year. Ladies and gentlemen, being that I play a lot of Superflex and tight end premium leagues, I'm going to focus on drafting more quarterbacks and running backs in my rookie drafts this year. I think I waste too many picks on wide receivers early. Wide receivers do not blossom as quickly. And I don't think I am maximizing the potential value of my draft picks by taking QBs in a super flex league. I reached this year, I took Herbert, and that paid huge dividends. But even middling quarterbacks are worth more than a breakout rookie wide receiver in trade value. And I think I'm going to look more to optimize my value in drafts rather than just taking the best player available. Don, go ahead.
So mine focuses on startup drafts as well. As you know with me, hope springs eternal. And I'm always all excited about the opportunity and potential of young players, particularly rookies, coming in to great situations. And I get way too excited and overdraft them, sometimes by way too much. And I wind up in a situation where it's year one and my roster looks like I am rebuilding the heck out of it. So for me, it is something that I need to personally guard against. And so my resolution is that I am not going to overvalue the incoming potential of what I think is going to be the next star wide receiver or the next Uber running back. And I am going to maximize the potential of the draft board rather than reaching for what could be and be willing to take what is.
Hope springs eternal. It's something that bites all of us. Ryan, you know that lore.
All too well.
You're up, brother.
Yeah, actually, mine was very similar to Don's. So good thing I had a backup. I want to be a little bit more in the moment with my fantasy teams. I have far too many teams where I'm rebuilding. I have all these young players, and the potential is through the roof, but it's not there yet. And I've sacrificed pretty decent teams in the present to basically hit the reset button. So I wanted to get better about that. And then so we don't have two of the same on here. Something else that I really want to work on too is accuracy and being more calculating when I make rankings. taking emotion out of it more, being very, I guess, more logical about it, because it's going to benefit me. It's going to benefit people who come to me for advice, and it's going to just make everybody better in the end.
That was fantastic, Ryan. Jared.
Well, much like I did in my dating life, I'm going to focus on only running backs under the age of 24. There's just entirely too much baggage that comes with a running back over the age of 24. I'm sick of pilfering through the David Johnsons and the Frank Gores and all of the different things. And it's probably going to lead me to have more of a modified RB type of strategy. Not a zero RB, but I want to have piles and piles and piles of young running backs. Specifically in the latter parts of the year, we're looking at these guys get the run. And these are the type of guys that are leading people to championships. And you can't rely on the older running backs for the entirety of the season. So that's my resolution for the year.
Is it okay if I email Mrs. Clifton and see if she's a 24-year-old running back?
She used to be a 24-year-old running back, and I signed her to a long-term deal, so we're okay there. She has more of a GM position now, so more of a player coach.
I'm pretty sure she's the owner.
Oh, absolutely the owner, 100%. Well, that will wrap up our show, and we hope it's been as entertaining for you as it has been for us. Guys, why don't you leave us with your tags and where the listeners can find you, and any final thoughts? Don?
If you guys need me, you can find me at Rider Dynasty or get a hold of JJ or any of the guys, and they'll make sure I get the information, because as we know, I choose happiness and stay off the social media. Fortunately, the guys enable me to do that. Again, the holidays have just ended, but it doesn't mean that the need to reach out to those that you love is anywhere diminished. We're approaching the new year, and it's good to just get out and just tell people that you care. Make sure that people know that you're thinking of them.
Ryan?
You can find me on Twitter at the Devy Dirtbag, also on Reddit user the Devy Dirtbag. This is a lot of fun. Thank you for having me on, and I'll catch you all in the next one.
All right, JJ, bring us home.
I'm at JJ Wenner on Reddit. I'm at IDP Thoughts. The main thing to say right now, I usually give you the number for the National Suicide Prevention Hotline. People who are in crisis will not call you. They will not tell you they're in crisis. I know that from personal experience. Reach out to people. You know, Don said it. Reach out to the ones you love and tell them that you love them. Because if somebody is hurting, they're probably not going to reach out to you. And they really need to hear from you. Especially over the holidays. So, man, love the ones. Love the ones you're with, man. Love the ones you're with.
Well, thanks, guys. I love having you guys on, as always. I'm Jared Clifton. You can find me on Twitter at UnstuckInTime82 or on RiderDynasty.com. This has been the Rule of Three podcast brought to you by Rider Dynasty. A very special thank you again to JJ, Don, and Ryan for joining me tonight, and we will be back soon with exciting off-season content. So follow us and the Rod Pod on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you pod. And remember, whatever you do, do it well, and always keep the ball in front of you.